Creator Pod listeners, we have something a little bit different for you tonight. This is a crossover episode with the Godfellas podcast with Zach and Hannah Smith and Mitch Dupree. Godfellas reviews a variety of Christian media as a broad category. Everything from McGee and Me to VeggieTales to The Last Temptation of Christ. And in tonight's episode, we discuss the 1973 feature film version of Jesus Christ Superstar. We hope you enjoy this crossover, and you can find Godfellas wherever you find podcasts, and there is a link in the show notes. We'll be back with a regular episode on Monday. Check out Godfellas with the Creator Pod.
While directing Fiddler on the Roof, director Norman Jewison encountered a rock opera by two British boys. He was intrigued and would go on to adapt that album into a film that garnered criticism from religious groups and received mixed reviews from critics. That was Jesus Christ Superstar. And this is Godfellas.
Detail. The greatest adventure with great detail. Godfellas, Godfellas, meeting online for a small group time. Godfellas, Godfellas, Christian media gets a rewind.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Godfellas, the small group that can tell you what's the buzz, tell you what's happening. I'm Mr. Zach.
Mrs. Hannah.
Hi, Mitch!
And, tonight, if you haven't picked it up yet, we are going to be talking about the Andrew Lloyd Webber, Tim Rice. I guess that would be the album, so we're talking about the movie Jesus Christ Superstar, which is a film that is not only from the 70s, but is the 70s,
I would say. In a movie,
it's the entire decade.
You want to know
it
what
is,
it was?
It is the band, yes, in a movie.
yes, it is. But before we get into that, ladies and gentlemen, I have very, very exciting news. We have made friends with yet another podcast, but this is more than just a podcast. This is a man. This is a wonderful man, a wonderful father, a wonderful host of events. He's very good at the game Blockbuster. Naturally very funny. He is the host of the Creator Podcast. So ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for Mr. Drew Forrester.
Thank you very much. And more than, you know, podcast buddies, I feel like you two sort of, you know, bookend of my life in some ways at this point. Hannah, your mom was an assistant to my parents very early in her career with the Salvation Army. I think before she had ever even met Bill Furman. So this is going way back. And then Zach,
confirm that
your parents were my parents' pastors up there in Old Orchard Beach. So I feel like in the two of you, I've got this like gap in my life of about 38 years or something like that. That's sort of represented in the two of you. It's pretty cool.
Godfellas is the beginning and the end. So, so Drew, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Creator Podcast?
Yeah, we're into our third season now with my co-host Darrell Houston, and basically what we look at in these conversations is the intersection of creativity and faith. And as much as we would like to really get beyond the bounds of the Salvation Army, a lot of the people that we've spoken to are connections there. We actually just had our first Jewish guest, a friend of mine from my a cappella group in college. And he is now a cantor in a temple on Long Island. And so that was really a neat experience to sort of talk about how they plan for a worship service and that kind of stuff, the similarities and the differences. Seems like there's a lot more similarities than there are differences when he described his role as a cantor, and he's actually studying to be a rabbi now. Wow. But yeah, so we've talked to a variety of different people with a whole lot of variety of creative creative endeavors, right? So we talked to Katie Luce, who writes the script for the Jesus Theater that's performed at numerous Salvation Army camps around the Northeast and I think across the country now. We've spoken to to woodworkers. We've spoken to musicians. Mm-hmm. We've spoken to outside worship, you know, and they are trying to really mentor other worship leaders and have been friends for a very long time. And so it's been a terrific experience talking to all of these different creators about what they're up to and just sort of that intersection of faith and creativity in general.
So I guess kind of the question that I more or less ask all the guests is when it comes to being Christians or people of the Christian faith, I guess, what are the rules for creativity? And I know that that's a nice and you can give a nice concise answer to that, but yeah.
I think a lot of the people that we have spoken to have tended not to go in for the rules-oriented world that sometimes is Christianity. I think they've often found themselves a little bit on the outside of that, you know, rules-oriented approach. You can't sing songs like that in church, and things like that. So I guess I feel like we talk to a lot of boundary pushers, I think, or at least a lot of people who want to think outside the box. And actually, Darrell and I, when he was my pastor, we worked together on our worship committee to think about how can we not just take the same bulletin that we used last week, change the titles and change the names and rinse and repeat this experience. How can we make this something that actually gets people to think a little bit more, gets people to consider God in a different way? Sometimes using secular video clips in a church service to just get people to approach the gospel in a different way, using a variety of dramatic presentations of the gospel and that kind of thing. So I don't know. I guess I'm not so much about the rules. I think I want us to get beyond that and really experience God in a personal way and recognize that people experience God in a variety of different ways and trying to be as creative as possible to facilitate those opportunities.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of boundary pushing, let's get into our topic for today, Jesus Christ Superstar. So, Drew, I was going to say, I don't know if you know this, but why would you? Years ago, when I moved to Dayton, Ohio, I was with Mitch and his parents were my boss. And they were saying, would you ever think about doing a musical? And we had a conversation about, well, you know, could we do Jesus Christ Superstar? And ended up watching it with everybody. And the general consensus was no, because like a lot of church shows, you can get away with people who aren't really singers, but maybe they're like fun to watch. And Jesus Christ Superstar is kind of the opposite, where like the actors don't need to be that good. You need people who can sing. But Mitch, you already knew about Jesus Christ Superstar. So I'm curious, how did you encounter that for the first time?
You know, I don't remember. I think I remember it being presented to me as the anti God spell.
Interesting.
It's like, hey, if Godspell isn't quite your thing, check out Jesus Christ Superstar. I have love in my heart for both of them.
Yeah.
Obviously, incredibly different shows. Yes. But yeah, you're right, Zach. I do remember we collectively looked around the room and said, we don't have the singers for this one.
Nope. Well,
I also feel like Godspell is the one that is safe for church and Superstar isn't really safe for church, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, Superstar dredged up a lot of controversy, and Godspell is a little bit safer for Christian audiences.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Hannah, you were aware, but you had not seen it until this past Monday, correct?
Correct.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Well, what did you...
I had seen bits and pieces of the 2018 live one on NBC, which
woof.
I even remember, like, not super into
well, I remember when that one came out and people were, like, texting me and they're like, you like this show? And I was like, not this show, I don't think.
I'm not trying to swing for the fences or offend any of the listeners, but this is just speaking for me personally.
Sure.
Whenever something's like Tyler Perry Presents, I'm normally like, I'm out. That's not for me. Personally, that's not, yeah. you know, a project I'm going to get jazzed about.
Yeah, I have never gotten into the Tyler Perry stuff either, in part because a lot of the white people that I know that seem to love Tyler Perry were kind of racist. And I didn't want to be, you know.
kind of racist, yeah.
Well, if I may, my other exposure with this musical was actually in 2018 when Zach and I were in a traveling production of Godspell. And I remember being in the car and he kept playing... Is it called Gethsemane? Like, is that the name of the song?
Yeah, just the part where he does the what?
Yeah, he kept playing it over and over again.
Because it's great. Because it's well, I tried to work the Heaven on Their Minds riff, the dun 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 dun.
Yes. Because
during in Godspell when Jesus is dying, it just says guitar solo in the music. So I was like, ooh, I wonder if I could fit this in, and it didn't work. It didn't work, which is unfortunate. But
Hannah,
yeah.
when Zach did that, did you decide, and this will be my future husband?
No. Well, it was weird because it would be like that one moment, and then it'd be like Captain Hook's lullaby or whatever.
Captain Hook's waltz.
There we go. The next. So it was more like, what kind of music does Zach like?
All of it. All of it is the answer. So, Drew, now we met officially a few months ago, and, you know, whenever you meet another podcaster in real life, it's like, ooh, well, we should work together, especially when it's about creativity and Jesus. So we kind of like threw some ideas back and forth, and I was like, when you have something like that you feel really strongly, yeah, there's smoke, it's incense.
There's incense that's not, burning. Yeah. It's not, I don't know if you noticed
you
the smoke
tell the
coming
truth.
From.
It's the 70s. No, but so I was talking to Drew and I was like, when you have something that you really want to talk about, let me know. And a few days or a week ago, he messaged me and he's like, Jesus Christ Superstar. Just, that's what I want. And I was immediately like, I'm in. Because I've wanted to do this one. I've wanted to do this one, but it's like, I didn't want someone who was just going to come in and, like, for lack of a better term, poo-poo it. Like, because, you know, people are like, oh, weird, boom. So, Drew, why did you want to talk about this one?
Well, it is my favorite rock opera, Christian or secular, you know.
Fair.
I don't know if, I'm not sure if when Andy Warhol wrote this, he thought that it was going to become, you know, like a new genre, that all of a sudden there'd be a bunch of rock operas. I guess in doing the research, I found that, and I know it was Andrew Lloyd Webber, by the way, that I was joking about Andy Warhol. But I found out that initially it was actually just kind of a concept album. They didn't see this as a show. It was just going to be an audio experience. I didn't actually know that until I was researching for this podcast episode. But my first encounter with it, and I should mention that the film came out the year that I was born. So I am of a very different generation from you guys. And we are talking about something that came out now nearly 50 years ago. But I first saw it on my college campus.
The movie or
no, they did a production of it my college campus. That was my first exposure to Superstar, you know, as a show. And I was particularly taken with the one of the things about Superstar is that kind of famously they've cast black actors as Judas. Judas is the main character opposite Jesus in the film. When you read the Bible, it looks like Judas has a bit part. He is like the other the other main protagonist here. But there was a woman named Okwi Okpakwasili, who was the Judas character. She was striking. Her voice was unbelievable. She has now gone on to win several Bessie Awards and a MacArthur Fellowship. So she's that good. Like, she is world class. And I just happened to be an undergrad at the same time she was, and she was in this production, absolutely stole the show. And I kind of fell in love with Superstar at that point. And then, you know, discovered the Broadway recording and stuff like that. But, you know, the movie is a little bit of a different, you know, thing. And as it turns out, the Broadway show kind of met with, you know, tepid response. It was far more popular in London than it was in New York. It had a like an 8-year run in London where it ran for less than 2 years in New York. And some people loved it and some people hated it. But yeah, the film version is slightly different, has some, you know, has some notable differences in it. but it absolutely is that, that decade. I love that comment.
So we will get into talking about the actual movie, which Drew, I do want to go back to when you were saying about that you saw it as a production first, because I remember when Mitch and I were just throwing around the idea of like, could we direct this, thinking this would be like such a challenge. Like, this would be, because Godspell is like, you know, it's parables and some songs. So it's kind of, you have as much, you could be as wild as you want, or you could be as like, you know, whatever.
Right.
But the Jesus Christ Superstar, because I think it was not written to be on the stage, there's that freedom of, you know, we could do whatever we want. So then when you're trying to move that to, you know, a production that people are going to come and see live, it's definitely like a real challenge. So, you know, I have respect for anyone who's tried to do this, even Lin-Manuel Miranda. So,
I should die.
You know, hey, we had to talk about it. It had to come up, but as we're getting started, I'd just love to hear, I'd love to talk about some of our favorite songs and some of our favorite elements of the movie. And I'll get it started. My favorite thing in this movie by far is Carl Anderson as Judas.
Yeah, absolutely. Same for me.
Yeah.
I'd say my favorite moment is him reprising I Don't Know How to Love Him. Maybe one of my favorite moments in a musical, period.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and the combination of his performance and the cinematography in the second song, In Heaven on Their Minds.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, the notion of shooting a guy singing and then backing up to shots that are, I think they must be a half mile away from him by the time that camera pan. And I'm like, this was shot without drones. How in the world did they actually pull that off? But the tracking shots in the desert, they had to be so hard to get. And then those guards that could be straight out of Clockwork Orange. Heaven on Their Minds is incredible. But I mean, also just the opening, you know, the very opening lines of the show, those guitar licks just always get.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It was cool the first time I watched it, thinking like, oh, this isn't, you know, gonna be, it's not quite what I'm expecting. And then when you think rock opera, it's like, yeah, it makes so much sense. That's why a lot of the music is so good. Some of it is not great, but Hannah,
anytime Carl Anderson sang, it was mind blowing. And I felt like he was also definitely the best lip syncer there.
Yes.
Yeah.
He almost made me think, like, the first time watching, I was like, is he singing for real? Like, there's no way. There's no way.
But I will say, I mean, I enjoyed the music. It's hard for me to really retain a lot of it after seeing it through. I knew Gethsemane from you playing it.
You're welcome.
I knew the just Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Super, that part. And then I knew I Don't Know How to Love Him. But I
Why did you know that one?
I played the fifth. Okay.
It's the right place, popular. Hannah. It's a hit. It's a single. Like, people culturally, I feel like that's a karaoke song.
Really interesting.
Not to the same degree like Day by Day from Godspell is, but I would say it's one of the singles from this show, and it does get sung a lot.
Mitch, sorry. do not distract from Hannah not wanting to answer this question. What is going on?
I used to watch Glee a lot when I was younger.
Maybe I'll start watching Glee if they have Jesus Christ Superstar.
They have that
on there.
Song. But
hey,
I would say
that's
that,
a diamond in the rough.
I would say the two songs that I have retained very much have. Oh no, the three.
Yes.
The What's the Buzz?
Yes.
I don't know what it's called, but she sings the Try Not to Get Worried, Try Not to.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And then Christ, You Know I Love You.
Don't, did you see I waved?
That was probably my favorite out of all of them.
I like when the movie goes full musical. Like when it just goes full, there's people dancing, there's
the
choruses
leaping,
singing. Yeah, like
the leaping in that song had me I think I was audibly going, yes.
You were.
Yes.
Yeah. When the movie really goes for it, and it doesn't always work, I'll say that, but when the movie just goes crazy, that's when I like it the most. You know, like a song where we count all 39 lashes, like is it a good song? No, but the movie's going for it. So I'm like, okay, respect movie.
Yeah, some Shades of Carmen there. That was not my favorite.
Absolutely, Shades of Carmen. Yeah, no, Hannah, I'm with you. I love the choreography. But I was thinking, Mitch and I actually talked about playing Annas and Caiaphas if we were going to direct it.
Forget the excuses. We want information. Get up off the floor.
We have the papers we need to arrest him. You know his movements.
I think about that when I watched it. I was like, that's one of the great regrets.
Because you told me that before, I did watch the movie with, it was not those actors. It was you and Mitch.
We need him crucified. That's some of the most.
I was going to say it was easy to figure out who was going to play Caiaphas. Yeah. It was not going to be Mitch.
we're about subverting tropes here. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
it's,
that's right.
I also feel like you either have to love or you have to hate like how 70s the movie is, because it's very
time stamped. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and talking about that, you know, the choreography on that number, the leaps and everything else. Mm-hmm. What you failed to mention is that the characters just appear out of nowhere in the desert.
Oh, yes.
That song,
yes.
Too. Yeah. It's such a 70s film effect. And, you know, just hilarious.
Yeah.
Is that the
great one
where they come out from behind the columns, too?
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought that was well done. That wasn't like an effect. Yeah. They're just standing behind the column and they pop out. So you could see that in a stage production if it were to actually happen. But some of the times when the people just appeared out of the clear blue sky was hilarious.
When I pulled it up just because I wanted to have a little chuckle. I like when it's the shot of it's like the columns and then there's the middle circle and it's just Jesus appears.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
On the middle.
Yes. Well, yeah, and I will say I did lean over to Hannah at one point and I said, the guy who directed Fiddler on the Roof did this. And she was like, no, he didn't.
That blew my mind.
And I forgot when Fiddler came out. So I almost thought that this was like pre-Fiddler and
his
he got
audition
better
for Fiddler.
On yeah, but then I was like, oh, no, this was, Jesus Christ Superstar was like his blank check movie. So, hey.
Good. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Moving on to things I didn't like.
Oh, wait, can we do one more thing I liked before we get into
that? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because first I wanted to ask you guys, how did you actually watch the movie? Because I had to get the DVD out of the library in order to see this film.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
I own this movie on Blu-ray and I own the digital copy. I'm ready.
How about you, Mitch?
I also own it. I also own it, but I had to rent it on YouTube because I watched it at the office.
Okay.
So.
I'm married to Zach, so that's how I watch it.
His movies are my movies.
Yeah.
Well,
I never have to.
I watched it a couple of weeks, I think even, you know, a week or two before I reached out to you, Zach. And so I actually sat there taking notes while I was watching the movie in anticipation of this. And one of the things I wrote down on Strange Things Mystifying was porno Caiaphas. Like, why is he shirtless? Why is it that a teacher of the law is shirtless?
Yeah, the movie is like very, and I'm not saying I find it this way, but it seems very like sexy.
Because the teachers of the law were sexy.
With those big balloon hats or whatever in the world they were wearing. Like, it's so funny because on the one hand, they hew like the closest to a Bible costume, you know, that you would traditionally see, except that they're shirtless and that they're, you know, like I said, porno Caiaphas.
Yeah.
We need a more permanent solution to our problem.
Well, it's interesting because originally when they were writing, like working on the script for like making this a movie, they thought like more Ben-Hur, and Norman Jewison was just like, I have my own idea.
Oh, I laughed out loud when I saw that on the wiki. I was like, Ben-Hur, this is no.
I can't imagine this being like taken as seriously as Ben-Hur is.
And Ben-Hur wishes.
Ben-Hur wishes.
Ben-Hur walked. So Jesus Christ Superstar
could run
leap out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. There are a few things though that, believe it or not, I'm not crazy about in this one, and I feel like this one is gonna cause some sparks, but I don't like Mary Magdalene's singing voice very much. Just something about it that I can't, like, it takes me out of the movie. And I don't know, because it fits the time period perfectly, but I don't like it.
Well, and I forget, was she the original singer from the album?
I think so.
I think she was the original singer from the album, and also like on Broadway. Like, she was the Mary Magdalene.
Sure. Yeah. Mitch, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say it's that timestamp thing. She has a very like balladeer singer 70s, you know, sort of voice to me. I don't mind it. There's a long list of singers in this show that stick out to me before her, like Herod for sure, you know.
Oh my goodness.
Like,
he is one year old great singer, but you
can... Yeah, but he could barely get the notes out, you know.
Oh. Can I say my favorite line from Herod is, get out of my life?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Are you aware that sometimes in stage productions of Superstar, Herod is played as a drag queen?
I would appreciate that very much.
Like that, actually.
Well, and I mean, even the guy that they cast in the film, you could see him going that route. You know what I mean? He just kind of jumps off the screen from that very first scene when the bus rolls in and he's like picking his hair out in a tank top. He's like, you know, I am this decade embodied. Yeah.
Yeah. What do we think about the opening of the movie where they all show up on the bus?
I like that. This watch through really got that thematic really hitting you over the head, you know, idea of like the superstar element, right? Like of the rocky theatrical, was this, you know, Jesus figure, was he, you know, legit, or was he, you know, just the Beatles of this time period, right?
Sure.
So I love framing the show that way, but it feels like it maybe didn't work for you.
I mean, it's one of those things where for me, it felt very much like that happens and then the movie starts. Like the same way how, you know, in Sound of Music, the first 5 minutes are wide shots of Austria. But then you get that payoff where you get that amazing shot that, you know, just swoops in on Julie Andrews singing and you're like, oh, it was all worth it. Whereas for me, it was very much like the opening happened and I was like, this is kind of cool. But then like, it's like, okay, we're done with that. Now the movie actually starts.
Yeah, but
I agree with that. Your point though. Yeah.
No, I agree with that. Like I saw a traveling production of Godspell when I was a teenager and like the intro to that show was like, they played Queens Under Pressure and did a little choreo drama.
They did.
That went I for like 4 or 5 minutes. Right. And then the show began. And I thought that production was cool, but it was like disconnected. And I agree. I think this introduction is a cool way to frame it, but Heaven on Their Minds is just such a bop in a great way.
Such a cinematic, such an incredible cinematic experience. I think they could have started with Heaven on Their Minds there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's a very different film, I think, you start that way. You know what I mean? In some ways, I think, and you also have to remember the times, right? As much as the world had changed in the 60s, you're still talking about a culture in which most people went to church on Sunday. It was still, you know, very much a part of their lives. And so it's almost like you have to announce, hey, we're doing something here, you know, and we're portraying Jesus as this rock star. And so we're doing this very on the nose, you know, rock star concert bus groupies, you know, pulls into town kind of deal.
Right.
So.
And it also feels like it wants, what I also got from it is that it wants to have one foot outside of reality. Like I think about in Last Temptation of the Christ, where there's that title screen that says, this is not the gospel account. This is like a what if with Jesus. And it felt like this was kind of doing that same thing. Like, hey, we're not actually telling the Bible story. We're kind of exploring some different elements, but this isn't like the real story. I also was kind of getting that vibe a little bit too.
Yeah.
It's an interesting idea though. If it had started with Heaven on Their Minds, I mean, it would be even more Judas's show than it is. Cause I would almost say for me, one of the things I love about the show is it's Judas's show, right? It's definitely his show. If you start with Heaven on Their Minds, it's explicitly framing the musical as this is an exploration of Judas, right? Which to me would be really interesting, but I love your point. Yeah, I can understand why in 70s, you know, or that era of America, we're probably not going to go like, hey, this is an ode to Judas Iscariot.
I mean, I also think just musically, it's quite obvious that, you know, Tim Rice and Frank Lloyd Wright, when they were writing this, they were really looking to feature the Judas voice. I mean, that part is among the most demanding, you know, parts to sing in any production I can think of. So it's very, you're right. They had to sort of, I mean, Jesus gets the titular, you know, call out there. But the show is all about Judas, and especially, you know, from the perspective musically, your most talented singer has to play Judas in this show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of Jesus, what did we think of the way that specifically the movie decided to portray our Lord and Savior?
Well, number one, he doesn't have as good a voice as Judas. His voice
he can,
is really
he can scream.
It's really scream. Kind of a unique voice. It's not you know, it's not an immediately attractive sound or that kind of thing, you know.
Well, I believe he was a drummer, right? Ted Neely.
Well, he was
a drummer who, he was like a drummer who could sing.
Well, and he was also cast performance unseen. When Jewison went out to see him, he was sick at the production and he took a meeting the next day, but he had like a jean jacket on and kind of a rock star look. And that was, you know, the basis on which Jewison said he knew he'd found his Jesus. Maybe he should have worked a little bit harder.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Do you know who some of the other people were that they were thinking about for that role?
I would love to know.
No, I don't know.
Mick Jagger was on the list.
Oh my goodness. Okay, yeah.
Way down the list was Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees. So, and David Cassidy. So those are sort of your brackets, right? Mick Jagger, right. John Lennon, Paul McCartney, Barry Gibb, Robert Plant, and Ian Gillan.
Wait. Can we pause and imagine a Barry Gibb Jesus Christ?
I know, like sliding doors, right? Sliding
it's
doors.
It's all I've ever wanted.
I'm loving that Robert Plant idea, though. That's
oh my goodness.
I mean, it is wild.
If you believe in a multiverse, there's a multiverse where Barry Gibb is Jesus Christ, the Jesus Christ superstar.
I would submit there's a multiverse in which all of those guys, there's a Mick Jagger multiverse, there's a John Lennon, a McCartney, a Robert Plant, and an Ian Gillan. It's crazy.
I looked at Hannah one point and I was like, I would love if they got like Bowie to play Jesus in this.
Right.
I would love it so much. But then you'll get him in Last Temptation in a few years, people. But he's totally serious there. So I don't know. Jesus kind of he seems over it in this production. Like, and I don't know if that just like comes down to Neely not really being an actor, but he just seems kind of disinterested and like, I don't know. It didn't work for me.
Zachary, I think that you are being ableist here. I think that you are interpreting Neely's lazy eye as disinterest. Yeah. Come on, man. Yeah. Be honest. It's because he's always looking off to the left. That's why you think he's not into
that
it.
That was me. We should admit that was me. I was like,
Hannah said, there's something about his face. I was like, he has a lazy eye.
Yeah, there's something I'm not proud of.
It was just, he never was smiling at anybody. He was always in a bad mood.
I kind of like that though. I love that you pointed out he doesn't have as pretty a voice or the technical ability of a Judas, right? But he has that raw belting power, and there's something, and gosh, I hope this isn't me being ableist and saying there's something about his lazy eye that makes him look distinct, but he does look distinct, right? Like definitely not like classically handsome, but there's something I think that is still somewhat magnetic about his look and his sound. Like, I can understand why it would feel different. And you're like, oh, what's he doing?
I also think that in the 60s and 70s to be, to be a rock star, was different than it is today, right? Like weren't all produced. Yeah. They weren't all sort of put through some sort of corporate spin cycle to see if they would test well in front of audiences and stuff like that. So I think you had a lot more, even Mick Jagger himself, like Mick Jagger from a physical perspective is not really an attractive person. He sort of oozes this sex appeal in a weird way, but like he's not a good looking guy per se.
Yeah. Mm.
Those rubber legs. Yeah. Well, I mean, while we're on the subject of Christ, what do we think Jesus Christ Superstar is trying to say? Because I think I wrote this in my review. It is, I feel like the movie isn't really able to explore the depths of its own soul because it's limited by being a rock opera. Like, because every song, everything has to rhyme and everything has to like kind of flow. So there's a lot of really like powerful and thoughtful ideas that it brings up. But it seems like it can't, go 100% into those. And that could be because two 19-year-olds wrote this, or it could be because, it does have its limitations as being a rock opera. But it does feel like a little bit handicapped in the fact that like no one can talk about how they're feeling, but also I like that it's open to interpretation. Like that's how I like to engage with art. I don't like everything spoon fed. I just don't think the movie is able to be as powerful as it maybe could be.
I don't know how much more didactic you could get with this subject matter without the masses lighting America on fire. What I mean by that is like, I think this show is given a little bit of poetic license to explore some themes that are, just as incendiary as like A Last Temptation of Christ. And I could be wrong, but from what I know, like it definitely had like resistance, but it wasn't like people were burning down movie theaters the way Last Temptation of Christ was received. Like it was, like people were just like, oh, I can't believe you depict Jesus that way. But I could be definitely wrong about that. I don't know the history of the show as well.
One of my favorite lines from the wiki is that the show was met with a massive dose of British indifference, even condescension, recalled Weber.
there you go.
And so I think, first of all, you have to remember that it originated in the UK. That it didn't start in the States. This was a UK show initially. And so I don't know if the UK was more accepting of the sort of, questioning of, was Jesus Christ, really the Messiah? Was he the right person in the right place at the right time? I think the overall message of the film and of the show in general almost is you could put a question mark at the end of Superstar. It's like Jesus Christ, superstar. Because and I think maybe, Zach, that gets a little bit at Neely's performance as well, is because I think it's even trying to portray Jesus as not being 100% sure himself about whether he deserves all this attention, and you know, and I think they really play up the, you know, is he really going to be able to, you know, to go through with this mission kind of thing. So I really think the show is it has the entire cast questioning, and even I don't know how to love him, right? Everybody has questions about Jesus in this cast. You know, the Pharisees and teachers of the law want to get rid of him. And, you know, Judas is like, I think it's become all about him, and I don't think that's really right. And so it's kind of like the whole show is really a questioning of who Jesus was, which was incredibly revolutionary 50 years ago, as far as, you know, the general culture went. Like I said, still a very church going culture in general.
How do you think this? Go ahead, Mitch.
No, I was just going to say, like, have you ever seen like the clips of Bo Burnham when like people would shout out at his concerts and stuff like, I love you. And then he like breaks down what parasocial relationships are and how like unhealthy that is, like at his fans. I'm like, oh, that's so interesting. But I mean, that's sort of what the show to me kind of explores a little bit, is like, not necessarily parasocial relationships, but like the things we demand of celebrity figures how we all ask of them, you know, to give us the things we need. Right. Like every moment of Jesus' life has been scrutinized literally for thousands of years. Yeah, right.
Sure.
You know, so even like something as small as, you know, getting his feet washed and his hair washed, you know, has been like, we've written books on this, right? Of like, well, should that have gone to the poor? And, you know, what does it mean to pour out our worship on the Savior, right? Like,
can you imagine the subreddits? If Reddit had been around back then, it would have been insane.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
What was for Jesus, the man, a moment of like sitting down, getting a nice, you know what I mean? Like,
so, look at this nice thing someone's doing for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Mitch, oh, no. Now there's a Reddit thread on it. Yeah. So,
Mitch, why did you put that in my mind? Do you know how badly I now want to see a Jesus Christ Superstar remake starring Bo Burnham as Jesus?
Like, oh, my goodness.
Why did you put that?
Oh, my goodness. This multiverse thing.
Who would play Judas?
Has me thinking.
Gerard Carmichael would play Judas. Although, yes. I don't know if he sings, but.
He does now in my multiverse.
He will. He will.
He can sing. I can just
imagine like a multiverse where like John Lennon's like publicist is like, you gotta, after writing Imagine, you gotta give one to the Christians. So you're gonna be Jesus. You're gonna be Jesus.
So what do we think? Let's say, you know, we have, well, not, this is just the truth. We have generations of people who are discovering and engaging with this kind of art for the first time. So I guess before we move on to our manner segment, I'm just curious, like, what do we think that today's audience can take from this film?
Ooh, a ton. One big thing I'd say, for, we've hit this a bunch, but like, anyone, I guess, in Western society is probably at least familiar with the term like Judas, like Iscariot is like a betrayer, right?
Yes.
You know, you Judas, right? And I think if you have not seen the show, you'll watch the show and you'll have a healthy appreciation for the nuances of what can lead someone to do, you know, something that it can be two-dimensionally thought of as like, you know, an evil betrayal, right? Like, this is
right
about Judas' doubts and about his very real concerns of what, you know, drove him to make the decisions he could have made, you know. And it's completely fictionalized, to be clear, like, this isn't in scripture, right? You know, but could have definitely been at play. So, you know, 19-year-old Mitch, who was a big John Green fan, he had this tagline saying, imagine people complexly. So I think it's a beautiful gift that we have a show that allows us to imagine one of history's, you know, most famous and tragic figures a little bit more complexly. That alone is a gift.
Well, you know, could make the argument that Shakespeare turned Judas into Brutus, right? You know,
right.
Et tu, Brute. But I agree. I think this is a far more a far more full pictured portrayal of Judas. I think one thing this generation could take away, and we've talked about sort of the sexy 70s factor here. but I was struck by the temple scene, that it's more of a burlesque bazaar, and it was less about sort of capitalism and more about sex. Yes. I'm not really, you know, that's extra biblical, but it is interesting. And then Jesus like lays the smackdown with falsetto violence. Like he just, you know, comes in there and,
temple.
That's right.
I love it. I love it.
I don't know. The more I think about this,
falsetto violence.
Yes. Well, I think you really missed an opportunity, Zach. I think you really could have done this superstar thing. Maybe you could have played all the roles.
I'll tell you what. If this gets 80 likes, I'll do it.
We'll pull from all of our Godfellas guests.
There we go.
Like a live.
Just have Michael Williams do the show. It'll be great.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
I will say, I know we've already touched on this, but I think just reiterating, like, I think that this film will probably, or this musical, this the collective this, will speak to a lot of people that are very deconstructing in their faith right now.
Oh, sure.
Like, I think, because I think it prompts a lot of good questions about faith and personal relationship. I think that's something I'm even realizing now. I feel like I'm still chewing on it. Like, I feel like I've kind of been silent, but I don't think I fully processed everything I saw the other night in a good way, because I'm definitely interested, and I'm still thinking on some of those questions I had myself, you know. So I think that's how it kind of applies to today, is if you're looking for some nice prompts for your own like soul searching, faith seeking, I would say that this will provide you a lot of questions.
I think it also suggests sort of one of the central problems for Christianity as a religion going forward. And it sort of presents it as some of these things were issues right from the very beginning, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so exactly. You have this central figure, this messianic figure that has been waited for centuries, for, you know, millennia. He arrives. He's here briefly. He is a superstar. He is this beyond anybody's wildest imagination kind of person. And then he leaves. And what do you have left after that, you know, central figure leaves, and, you know, in that Last Supper scene, and for all you care. And then Jesus getting called a jaded Mandarin. By the way, I had to look that one up, because I've been singing that lyric for years, and I'm like, what in the world's a jaded Mandarin? It was a hypocritical leader. And so it gets back into that whole questioning thing. But I think it definitely sort of sets up this thing of like, how do we as the church today go on when the central figure, you know, in his physical form was here 2,000 years ago? And what it sort of brings to light is there were some challenges from the very beginning with how the community around Jesus was going to respond and was going to carry on, was going to follow through with his ministry. So that's kind of been there from the very beginning. I think that's absolutely an interesting thought.
And
go ahead, Mitch.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, of the shows we mentioned, like A Godspell or like Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and this, I would say, having gone through deconstruction and reconstruction and still in reconstruction, this is the most interesting show by far.
Yes.
Someone who's not a believer, right? Mm-hmm. Like, those other shows are real inside baseball. This show, I think, has an interesting central premise of what we've hit on. Like, is he a Messiah? Was he at the right place at the right time? Right. Like, that's, and for me, being someone who's like, I don't want to be too like heretical, I'll just like say like what my personal view is. I'm okay with a little bit of both, right? Like the idea that like Jesus was at the right place at the right time, but were the songs good? Like, was his message good enough that we should keep listening thousands of years later, right? Like, that to me is an interesting question as well. So, you know, whatever you want to chalk up, you know, his incredible lasting, the endurance of his message, I think it's worth an examination of does what Jesus was peddling itself hold water for you? And is it transformative for you? Are those songs good? Mm. You know, like, anyways.
Well, I think before we move on, and then me being me and tying it into actual, like, what moves me, I will say I've never, if I have to watch one more movie of Jesus in the garden where he just kind of like whispers a little prayer and then everything is fine afterwards, like, and there's just like little, by the way, there's some drops of blood. If I have to see that again, I'm going to lose it. And for this movie to essentially, he's having a full on screaming match with his father is like, I believe this is someone who is struggling with what they have to go through. And that is, you know, not everything he says in the song, but the idea of Jesus wanting, you know, to be relieved of that is in the scriptures, and it's there. And we know that it was a very intense thing for him. And I feel like the movie really leans into that, which can maybe be a little off-putting and some might say it's over the top. But to me, I would rather see that than another movie where, you know, quiet Jesus, you know, prays for 30 seconds and then goes like, okay, everything's going to be fine now. But like, well, seeing him come to the conclusion is like very powerful.
If the Passion of the Christ really focused on the physical violence of the crucifixion, I feel like Superstar definitely gets into the emotional violence of the crucifixion. Yes. You know, it's all about that time leading right up to the crucifixion and everybody having these misgivings, including Christ himself, and that it's not it's not to be taken lightly. This is heavy, heavy stuff that everybody's dealing with.
Yeah, it's like the fickleness of the mob, right? When it's framed in this celebrity, you know, sort of, you know, framing, then it makes total sense, you know, in our contemporary context, right? We're like, oh yeah, we see, you know, superstars, one hit wonders, you know, people who come and go, you know, all the time, where we turn on, you know, like, I did have this annoying trite thought as I was watching of like, you know, the whole idea of like cancel culture, stuff like that, which is super reductive. I'm like, but I mean, it, you know, the idea of like us turning on a dime on someone because the song changed right on what they were saying is so everlasting an idea. So I was like, it's right there in Jesus' life, you know,
Jesus Christ canceled star.
I'm super bummed I took this there, by the way. A little bit.
Well, folks, it's about that time where we're going to use our manners.
Just like when they offered you more Hawaiian pizza at teen night, when I offer you more of a Jesus Christ Superstar, I'd like for you to give me a yes please or a no thank you. So Hannah, we've got some boxes of Hawaiian pizza. Can I interest you in some?
I am willing to try Hawaiian pizza again because I'm not sure how I feel about it. I think there's still a lot that I'm chewing on, that I'm processing. And I think it only way to really know how I feel about it is to continue to dive deeper into what all the content is.
Okay. All right. Well, Mitch, got some Hawaiian pizza here. You know, it's teen night. Gotta have the pizza. Would you like some?
Yeah, I don't like Hawaiian pizza, but I love this musical. I think, Zach, maybe something that you, I'm gonna project onto some of your reservations about a show like this. For me, it comes from some of the musical moments specifically. Like, I'll just say rock operas in general tend to be pretty kitschy and embarrassing.
Can
for
you
me.
Name another rock opera?
Rent.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, and so many others. And I think because it's usually like spanning multiple kind of subgenres of rock and roll that like can be a little bit, I don't know, clumsy or like tonally imbalanced musically. But thematically, what this show is getting into through the vehicle of you know, of music. Again, like, I love the idea that this could just be a concept album because I think the lyrics are so rich and what we're kind of, you know, getting into. It's such a beautiful idea. It totally works for me. And And I wish we had more, you know, religious art in this vein. You know, like, just to get personal with it, and then I'll drop the mic and get out of here. But there are days as a believer, I don't know if I believe in like a bodily resurrection of Jesus, right? There are days when I'm like, oh, that makes sense. And there are days I'm like, I just don't know if I can believe that. What brings me coming back over and over again, you know, to the table is the story of Jesus' life. It, you know, even when in my deepest season of doubt, when I'm like, I don't know if he is the Messiah, but the story of Jesus' life is compelling enough, and who Jesus was as a person is compelling enough that it's worth,
yes.
You know what I mean? It's worth taking that intellectual risk and that emotional risk of like, if I'm wrong, it's worth spending my entire life, you know, trying to get to the bottom of this story. So when I get art like this, it reminds me of how deep and mysterious that story is. So I can only hope we get more shows and more art like it.
Hmm. Well, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, Mitch. To continue the analogy, though, Drew, can I interest you in some Hawaiian pizza?
No youth pastor I ever knew went outside the two flavors of youth group pizza, which are cheese and pepperoni. Those are the only acceptable toppings in a youth group setting. So I also object to any characterization of a youth group youth pastor passing out Hawaiian pizza. Also not my favorite. But I definitely say more, please. As I said, this is you know, my favorite rock opera, one of my favorite shows of all time. And I really would have enjoyed like Saul Paul blinded by the light, or, you know, Peter, the Rock. You know, I think they really could have done a whole series of these. And then we could bring it into, you know, like the modern era, and it's like Bill Hybels and, you know, there's all kinds of controversy you could stir up with some of these modern people. Let's not mention the Southern Baptists, but, you know, so yes, more please, completely with this show. It is, it's one of my favorite pieces of artwork ever.
Mm. Well, and to agree with everyone else, I also am not a fan of Hawaiian pizza, but here's why I chose it for the analogy, because it's a thing where Hawaiian pizza is not for everyone. But the people who like it, it's one of those things like you're either in or you're out. Like no one's kind of like, it's okay. Like you either love it or you hate it, or you're like, or the middle, you're trying to understand it, you know?
Well, and pineapple is wonderful chilled, but it shouldn't be cooked. And I love ham and I love pizza. But when you put all the elements together, yeah, I agree. It becomes an acquired taste.
Exactly. And and that's why I went with that. Because I think Jesus Christ Superstar, watching it today, is definitely going to be a bit of an acquired taste. It's, you know, it's going to ask a lot of the audience, but I think it's one where if you get it, you're going to love it. If you get on board with it, like at the beginning, if you're in, then you're in. Like, honestly, if you haven't seen this movie and you're thinking about checking it out, like if you don't like the first 5 minutes, stop watching, because it only gets more.
Well, don't you have to go like 10 minutes? I mean, don't you have to get to the second song? Get to the second song at least.
Get to What's the Buzz? Tell Me What's Happening.
Well, that one too. Very catchy.
No. Yeah.
So this is one where, like, for me, it's one like, yeah, I know it's not for everybody, but I really enjoy it and I really like it. And if nobody else wants it, that just means more for me.
So a few months ago
and a few episodes,
we played a game that was unusually tricky, and it could be the very same thing tonight. So as we know, Anthony Floyd Webster composed Jesus Christ Superstar.
Sign off on that.
So I did steal your joke. I mean, Anthony Lloyd, now I have to think, what's his real, no.
Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Andrew Lloyd Webber has composed many a musical.
Yes.
So this game is called Andrew Lloyd Webber musical character or Disney character?
Good.
Incredible. My whole life has been building to this, by the way.
I'm ready.
I try not to get... The Disney characters are deep cuts, but they're not as deep as the very first time we played this game.
Whew. Judas.
So, let's see how it goes. All right.
I'm ready.
First one. It's just so basic. It's Cassandra.
Cassandra.
I think I'm going to say Weber.
I'm trying to remember in Phantom of the Opera.
Yep, that's what I'm thinking.
No, I don't think that's right, though.
What's the sequel to Phantom of the Opera? Like Love Never Dies or something?
Yeah, weirdly, I know Love Never Dies a little better at this point than Phantom of the Opera, and I don't remember Cassandra. Mm. But I could be wrong.
Well, luckily, we don't have to say the name.
Wait, are we
show.
Including Pixar and
there
Disney?
Are no Pixar in this.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, just because you two are leaning Weber, I'm gonna lean Walt and call this one Disney.
All right.
Ooh.
I'm also gonna say Disney. I think it's Disney.
I'll stick to my guns.
All right.
This is Disney.
Hey!
I quit. I'm out.
Cassandra was the name of a character on the Hercules animated series.
Okay. These are still such deep cuts.
I like how you started. You're like, they're not going to be that deep.
They're not the show Hercules.
It's awesome.
They're not as deep as old Mickey Mouse comic books.
There might be. Do you know how much content there was in the 90s on the Disney Channel?
When was the last time you watched the Hercules show? Like the other day.
When we were falling asleep. Like that's
still.
When is the last time I actively watched it? Childhood. Drew, did you know they made a Hercules TV show?
Oh, I've watched every episode twice.
Oh, man.
Right, I'm ready.
Well,
it's going to
be a fun game.
If well, one wait, of these questions is a Rum-Tum Tugger.
When you watch the Hercules TV show, do you watch it in the original German or do you do the subtitles? The dub.
I do it all. I love Kevin Sorbo.
All right. Next one. I can't even say it. Jemima.
Oh.
Oh, ooh. No.
I'm uncomfortable.
Well, the easy answer, I feel like, is vaguely racist. Probably Disney.
Right.
Right.
Probably.
Right. Probably I'm gonna go. Disney.
That's where I'm leaning. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm going to go.
Disney?
Yes.
Wait. That's not like one of the cats, is it? From Cats?
Mm. What else has Andrew Lloyd Webber done? He's in Cats, Phantom of the
School
Opera,
of Rock,
Evita.
School of Rock.
There's no Jemima in Evita.
Acknowledge School of Rock, Mitch.
I'm not going to. The best thing School of Rock gave us was the guy who plays Dewey.
Yes, he's very good.
Alex Brightman. Yeah.
You know what? I'll go Disney on this one, actually.
It's Song of the South, probably.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I love that I get to edit this show.
It's Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh my word.
What is it?
This is the name of a cat that was not featured in the 2019
whoa,
film.
Whoa.
It's
okay,
a cat
okay.
from the stage show.
I thought you were going to say it was not, like, didn't make it to the cut. I was going to go, how deep
no,
is...
No,
okay,
no,
fine.
No,
fine.
No but good for you, characters. Zach. You nailed it. You nailed that nail it was a cat. Mm. Yeah.
True to your heart. You must be true to your heart.
Jenny Anydots was my favorite cat, so, you know.
Me too.
Jemima,
me too.
The
I like Skimbleshanks, the railway cat. He's very fussy.
Rum-Tum-Tugger.
Rum-Tum-Tugger is my favorite.
I was cracking up when I was finding the names for this. I could not stop laughing because I've not seen Cats, the show.
Yet.
I've not seen the movie. I know memory, but that's about it.
I know what we're doing tonight.
But I did not know. Oh, no. I did not know there was a cat called Buster for Jones.
He's not scanning bones. In fact...
Yeah, Buster Jones is a big fat joke. I hate it.
Yeah, it's
Sorry.
Really bad.
Yeah, for like
just
multiple
the name
songs.
Buster, though.
Buster, yeah.
Yeah, it's, I know what the
James Corden cat. Yeah.
Oh, it's yeah. Oh, okay.
They released the web series of Cats. Did you watch that at all or no?
Wow.
I'm just kidding.
I'm so excited.
I'm picking up on the Hercules TV show.
All right. Okay.
My heart is ready.
Denia.
Denia? Man, these are, you're really good.
Very well done.
Now,
yes, it is incredibly well done. I'm impressed.
Yeah. You're
Thank
really
you.
Good at picking these.
I call myself Games Are for a reason. I call myself.
Yeah.
Denia.
I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. I should be clear.
Can you spell it?
Oh, yeah. Can we get a spelling? This is like the spelling bee meets the podcast. It's so exciting. And
I feel like I have to ask a clarifying question. Are these characters who are there any characters who would not have been named in the show? But like,
because
I feel like this could easily be like one of the 12 sons in Joseph's wife or something is named Denia. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be named in the show.
This is named, yes.
Okay. Denia.
Right, okay, so call Denia by her name.
It's D-A-N-I-A. Maybe Denia?
Denia, potato, potato.
Let's call this whole thing off.
I think I'm gonna go Weber, actually.
Yeah, I'm ALW Although, on this one as well.
Would that be three Webers in a row? But you said it's random.
I did randomize.
Okay, so I'll say Weber then.
Also, you know, we're split right now. There's been one Disney, one Weber.
Okay.
Yes, I thought so.
Here's the sick thing of it. I was in Joseph and Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Phantom of the Opera was the only thing I listened to from ages 14 to 16. And I still feel like I have no idea on this. So I'm furious at you, Hannah. But I do think it's Andrew Lloyd Webber. It's got to be.
It's got to be. Oh, no.
I feel awful.
You should.
It's Disney?
It's Disney.
What is it?
She played, she was Tantor's girlfriend in the Tarzan animation.
I object.
Do you feel good about that
game? I object,
Hannah,
to the game.
Do you feel good about that, Hannah?
If I'm expected to know secondary characters from 90s
the TV
animated
show?
TV shows, then I'll never win.
Yeah, but I feel like the game is fun on its merits just in terms of the names themselves, because they both feel like they could, you know, they could exist in each universe. I think that's the brilliance of the game.
If we never played this game,
Jimmy
wouldn't
have found a name for his child.
Oh, yeah. Motato Hughes. Yeah.
Motato Hughes. That's true.
That, you're right. I repent, Hannah. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
This is probably the last time we'll ever play this game.
Are you out of
crazy Disney names? Is that what it is?
No. I still have a few more.
Yeah, don't doubt yourself here. I mean, you can't make this game like Jafar. You know what I mean? Like,
it's perfect
the way it is, Hannah. Don't let them bully
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Oh, wait a sec. I object to being called a bully because I want it from a movie and not a 90s animated TV show. I feel like there's a happy medium to be found. But
what
yes,
kind of
I'm
Disney
sorry.
Fan are you, Mitch?
Not big enough, clearly.
Okay, the next one is Fleck.
Oh, that sounds... That
Fleck?
Sounds...
Not Flick, but Fleck?
No, Fleck. Fleck.
F-L-E-C-K.
Okay, played by Chevy Chase, right?
Yes.
He was a reporter.
That's what I was thinking.
That's a different guy.
Not a movie that has aged well, by the way.
Oh, no.
Fletch. Yeah.
There's not a lot that Chevy Chase has done, period, that's probably aged very well.
Yeah.
Except for the Gerald Ford falling on the Christmas tree thing.
I'm going to say...
Fleck.
You know what? Not to sound like a broken record, I think I'm going to say Weber again. That's like a character from School of Rock. Like, oh, we got Fleck on the xylophone.
I was going to go for the Wheels of Steel there, but I'm going Fleck as some sort of, animal humanoid creature in some Disney production. So I am saying...
On the Aladdin TV show, he's the genie's son.
I'm going to go Andrew Lloyd Webber because I know there are like 15 other shows he's done besides the six I know. So law of averages. He's got to be in here.
He didn't do Pippin. That was Schwartz, right?
Yes, that was Schwartz.
Yeah.
My friend, Stephen Schwartz.
Name drop.
His legal team.
When are you going to get him on the show, Hannah?
Never. All right. That was Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Boom. Woo! What is it?
Oh, wow.
Fleck is a character in Love Never Dies.
I knew it. I knew it because I watched Lindsay Ellis' video on that.
Is he one of the carnies?
I believe so. I'm not. I'll be clear. I am not familiar with really any Andrew Lloyd Webber show except for Phantom of the Opera.
What?
Whoa. That's really the one to be aware of his work.
Yeah.
You know?
So,
I mean,
there we go.
All right. Yes, yes. How many more do we have, Hannah? I want to know how we're what my chances are for winning.
Four more.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, the next one. I'm hoping this one. Marie.
Well, that could be both. Can I say both?
Jack just left the room.
I'm out.
Marie?
Well, now I can't think of a Disney movie with a Marie in it.
I think you can.
I don't think
there's
I can.
Hint. There's a hint.
Marie.
Marie.
Marie. I just Maurice. Met a girl named Marie.
Marie.
I mean, technically, the new West Side Story is a Disney film, so...
It's an animated film.
Oh,
so it's a Disney...
So, okay, well, I'll just show the hand.
It's busted!
No, it's Andrew Lloyd Webber's famous animated musical.
That's right.
Phantom of the Opera.
It's technically both.
That's what I was going to say.
So there is a Marie in Andrew Lloyd Webber's newest musical, Bad Cinderella.
Bad Cinderella?
Yeah.
I thought it was just called Cinderella.
Art was a mistake.
But do you know the Marie in Disney?
No. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's...
Give me a hint.
Okay, hold on.
Do you know the Marie?
Yes, yes,
I think
yes,
she's pulling it up.
Yes. There are two Maries in Disney.
I can't think of either one.
One of them is named in a song.
Da, da, da.
Oh, wait. Wait. Isn't the one of the cats an Aristocat?
Yes. Name
yes. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And there's the other.
Everybody wants to be a cat.
That's not the right song. That's
I know.
It's a different movie.
Marie sings when you sing your scales and your arpeggios.
Yes, she does.
Yes.
With Toulouse. I don't know this one.
Should I give it away?
Yes, please.
Marie. The baguette.
That's hurry up.
Oh,
that's
okay. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, you should feel good about that one.
You should feel really good about that one.
That was very powerful, Hannah. Thank you.
All right.
Bad Cinderella.
Bad Cinderella. Gosh, it was open for like 3 weeks, I think. Like on West End, it wasn't in the it didn't make it to the States. All right. Next one.
Yes.
Gangle.
That sounds like some Disney nonsense to me, but that would be too easy, I think. Gangle, what if Hannah's tricking us and she's put in another carny from Love Never Dies? Doesn't that sound like a carny?
I'm going to say Disney.
My knee jerk was Webber, and I'm sticking with it.
I'm going to go Webber because I think you put another carny in there. I'm wise to your game.
You're absolutely right. I put another carny in there.
Aha!
We're starting to catch up with the game
this game
Mitch.
With integrity.
Yeah.
All right.
They call me the prince of games.
Who calls you that?
I do. The jester.
All right. Second to last one.
Okay.
Two more.
Oh boy.
Ooh, right,
this one. This one's a first and a last name.
Ooh.
Rusty McCoy.
That's got to be a Disney.
Very Disney to me.
Rusty McCoy. I agree, which is why I'm going with Webber. I think this was
a clever ruse.
Exactly.
Yes.
This was a conscious fake on Hannah's part. I am going Webber on this.
Here's why I'm going to stick with Disney. There's a lot of 90s like live action Disney movies I just haven't seen. So yes. I'm not convinced this isn't a secondary character in like The Rocketeer or something, you know? So Rusty.
I don't think The Rocketeer was a 90s Disney movie.
The Rocketeer with Bill.
Wasn't Pullman? It earlier than the 90s?
Okay, yeah, it could be 80s. I don't know, but that's Disney,
yeah.
Wait, it is.
No, I should know the name of the four crewmen that went out in the finest hours since I worked for the National Coast Guard Museum Association. I don't think it's a coastie from that movie either. I'm sticking with musical theater here. Rusty McCoy was in a musical.
It does also sound very musical when you say that.
I'm like, Rusty McCoy.
Yeah, like in Annie, Get Your
the
Gun or something.
The Sailor of the Seas.
Okay, I'm sticking with Disney though.
It is Andrew Lloyd Webber.
You clever games are.
Rusty McCoy is the name of the lead in the hit musical Starlight Express.
The hit musical?
It has its fans.
It does have its fans. That's true.
It has its fans.
I could not sing one bar of anything.
No.
So this last one, I'm just going to guess Disney.
Nope. Okay. Well,
you don't even want to know what it is?
No, I don't know what it is, but.
Mata.
Can I get a spell?
Mata.
M-A-T-T-A.
Well, now
Mata is the name of the character.
Now that Disney owns Sound of Music, that's the one little girl. I'm Mata, and I'm going to be 7-0.
Good. There you go. Good.
I'm Brigitte.
I'm going Disney just based on Mata. There's been a lot of Webbers.
I like it as that Disney for its vaguely ethnic but hard to identify sort of sound. So I'm going to go Disney as well.
That could definitely be Mater from Cars' grandmother or something.
Yes. All I can hear in my head is in The Lion King when they do that joke of like, what's the matter with you? Mm-hmm. Was there like a bug they eat named Mata? I can't remember.
Yes.
I don't know. It's got to be Disney, though.
You know, you're onto something there with bugs.
Oh, Bugs Life.
So it's Disney.
It is Disney. I'll give you that. Can anyone guess?
Well, Bugs Life is Pixar, back and forth.
Princess and the Frog.
No.
What other bug Jiminy Disney Cricket movies are there?
No. The character is not a bug, but the character deals
lives in
the
world of bugs. Deals with bugs.
I do not know.
An exterminator, maybe? He serves bugs?
Mata means, to kill in Spanish. So, kills bugs. Mm. There will only be one T.
Also onto something there. It's Spanish.
You wouldn't have a double T in Spanish, though.
Bugs.
Bugs. Mosquitoes.
I don't know.
So, Mata, I don't know if I'm saying the character name correctly, is the name of the waitress in Emperor's New Groove. With the red hair, and she serves them the bugs. Okay.
Does she ever say her name in the movie?
I could not tell you.
I feel like that's fair game, though, because, again, it is a movie and not a TV show.
And not Ferdy Fieldmouse.
And Rusty McCoy was the lead in a lesser-known Andrew Lloyd Webber show.
Yeah, that's totally on us.
I feel like with the right crowd, they would have gotten a perfect score on this one.
I think some of my musical theater friends, when they listen to this, will probably like be screaming. Like that
you'll be excommunicated from the community, Mitch.
That's okay.
Well, in conclusion, folks, if you can find Jesus Christ Superstar from 1973, and this episode is kind of captured your fancy, give it a shot and let us know what you think. We would love to engage with you on our Instagram page. That's really all we've got going on right now, but we would love to talk with you if you want to reach out, if you want to join our community, The Real Lounge. We would just love to talk about all of this stuff with you. But we are so grateful for our amazing, incredible guest, Mr. Drew Forrester. Drew, do you have anything that you would like to plug before we wrap it up here?
Well, certainly the Creator Podcast. We've had a lot of fantastic, fascinating conversations, and I think there's some crossover. I listened to your episode with the Swires, and I'm definitely interested in getting them on for the Creator Pod. But yes. we've got Brittany Parks in the mix coming up. We've got Bill Rollins from back in the day. Yes. Some people might remember Bill. He is booked for an upcoming episode. So so definitely check out the Creator Podcast, and then my little stupid TeePublic Redbubble shop, Boxer Beer Co., in which there are, you know, clever T-shirts, and you can get them on stickers and tote bags and hats and all kinds of different stuff like that. Some Jesus-y stuff and some pop culture-y stuff and some sportsy stuff. So Boxer Beard Co.
Link in the show notes.
On the socials, yes. Go. And link in the show notes. And by the way, I should mention that this fabulous woman who inspired my love for Superstar, my college alumni Facebook page has been going crazy. That might be the dinging you've been hearing in the background. Anyway, Okwui Okpak-Wasili is currently starring in Broadway in For Colored Girls.
Wow. Mitchell, do you have anything that you would like to plug?
Yeah, as you know, folks, I'm always shilling for my LinkedIn account. Listen, we are almost at 500 connections on LinkedIn. That is the magic number when it comes to the way the LinkedIn algorithm works. You get me to 500 and we'll stop doing these pledge drives. I hate doing them. You hate doing them. Get me to 500 connections on LinkedIn.
I hate LinkedIn. And I will...
We all hate LinkedIn, but we've got to do it. Give it to 500, folks. Maybe do an endorsement or two on some skills. You've heard some of the skills tonight. The public speaking, we appreciate it. Very, very much. You can find me at Mitch Dupree on LinkedIn.
Beautiful. Hannah?
No, I'm going to keep plugging at Godfellas the Pod and at The Honey Initiative on Instagram. That's where you can find what Zach and I like to do in our free time as well. We are not just podcast hosts. We are also worship leaders, and we've been doing a lot of fun stuff, and we have a few little things coming up throughout the summer, and we'd love to do more into the fall. So,
and the Honey Initiative is named after the color of your hair. Is that right, Hannah?
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Named after the fact that I'm practically Winnie the Pooh in that I eat honey maybe 70% of the day.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And I would like to plug the movie Duel. Not the Steven Spielberg one, but the Riley Stearns one with Karen Gillian and Aaron Paul that just came out. Can somebody else please watch that movie so we can talk about it?
Zach, that is so crazy because I just got AMC Plus to watch Better Call Saul, and I saw it on there, and I've been dying to watch it. So I will call you later this week.
Okay. Yeah, good. Thank you. Finally. Good. But until next time, I've been Mr. Zach.
I've been Mrs. Hannah.
I've been Mr. Mitch.
And I guess that makes me Mr. Drew.
Well, the adventure is over. We're all heading home. But I hope that you know, friends, you're never